We've all had this kind of problem before, haven't we?
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
The artificial intelligence Hal there causing problems for Dave in the 1968 movie 2001 A Space Odyssey. The question of what could happen if machines take over has intrigued and inspired movie makers and science fiction authors, but in general that premise hasn't been a major concern in the development of actual artificial intelligence. That's according to our next guest. He says the way we've been thinking about artificial intelligence has already caused some big problems in society, and we need to rethink what we want from artificial intelligence and how to get it. Stuart Russell is a professor of computer science at the University of California, Berkeley. His new book is called Human Compatible: Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control. Stuart, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. It's nice to be here.
Well, before we get into the concerns you raise about how we're tackling artificial intelligence, I think just that phrase may conjure up a lot of different images for a lot of people. What do we mean when we're talking about artificial intelligence?
So we mean, how do we make machines intelligent? And I want to be absolutely clear up front. This is nothing spooky. We're not talking about sentience. We're not talking about some spontaneous awakening. There's no Hollywood stuff. It's just intelligence here means acting in such a way that you can expect to achieve your objectives.
And you write that in the artificial intelligence world, the goal has been kind of a one-track goal to make it smarter. And the question of what to do once it got to the point of smartness we wanted to doesn't always cross the minds of a lot of people. Why is that?
It's a great question. I think you know, the issue is, what happens if we succeed? We've been trying for 70 years to bring AI to the point where it's as intelligent as human beings, or maybe more intelligent. But we never asked, what happens if we succeed? and I think one reason for that is it's so incredibly difficult. It's turned out actually to be a lot more difficult than people expected. You know, many famous researchers, you know, even Nobel Prize winners, have come a cropper by saying, oh, we're going to have, you know, full AI within 10 years or within 20 years or whatever. So it turns out to be very hard because, in fact, human intelligence is an amazing thing. Our brains are unbelievably well-adapted and incredibly capable. And it just has turned out to be very difficult to get machines to be anything close to the level that humans exhibit, you know, even when they're small children. That may be changing now. So that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book right now.
Yeah, we're still on the road there now at this point. That said, what are the ways that we might interact with artificial intelligence as it exists today in our lives, maybe without being aware of it?
So probably the most pervasive example is on the internet. Whenever you use a search engine, whenever you use social media, whenever you're shopping on Amazon or whatever, there's AI happening all the time. So the search engine itself is, in fact, a big AI system that tries to figure out what your query is about and what you would most like to see in response to your query. And if you're shopping, you know, they can make tons more money if they can figure out what you really might want to buy and send you ads for that or recommendations for that. So that's the biggest money-making side of AI. I think the most obvious one that's coming down the pipe is the self-driving car. I think when those are widespread, it'll be so much in your face, you won't be able to ignore it.
Talking to Stuart Russell, computer science professor at the University of California, Berkeley. His new book is called Human Compatible: Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions for our guest. Stuart, you write, and the recurring theme in your book is that we have to think about the goals we have for artificial intelligence and how, no matter how well-intentioned we are, that artificial intelligence might misconstrue what we want out of it or the consequences of getting there. Can you spell that out for us?
Yeah, so pretty much every AI system that's ever been built is built on the same principle, which is that we supply the objective, and then the algorithm figures out the best way to achieve the objective. So, you know, when you go on your phone, you say, you know, I want to get to the airport, tell me how to get there. It takes that as the objective, and then it tells you, okay, here's the right sequence of actions to get to the airport. So it's a very natural form of interaction, but it's subject to a very basic problem, which is what happens if you specify the objective incorrectly? And we've known about this for thousands of years. You know, King Midas said, I want everything I touch to turn to gold, and then he got exactly what he asked for. That included his food and his drink and his family. And, of course, he dies in misery and starvation. You know, if you ask a genie, please can you grant me three wishes, you know, what is the third wish in those stories? It's always, please undo the first two wishes because I got them wrong. So that's the nature of the problem. We're creating this sort of engineering technology that only works correctly if you, the human, are absolutely perfect at supplying the one thing it needs, which is the objective.
Yeah, you give a lot.
That's a really bad idea.
You give a lot of concrete examples of how this could go wrong. And one, getting into that self-driving car, if you say, I think the example that you give in the book is, get me to the airport as quickly as possible. We mean one very particular thing like that. How could that be misconstrued if we haven't laid out our algorithms properly?
Well, yeah. So when we say as quickly as possible, we don't just mean that, right? We mean a whole bunch of other things that we normally don't have to say to a human taxi driver, like don't crash, don't get a ticket, don't get arrested, don't kill anybody. So between humans, many parts of our objectives are shared, and so we don't state them all the time. And so we're used to giving these very partial instructions like, you know, I'm late for my flight, please hurry up. But for a machine, it may not have all that additional common sense background. So it might drive at 200 miles an hour. You know, when it gets to that big scrum of cars at the drop-off point, it may sort of just shove the other cars out of the way so it can get you to the drop-off point as quickly as possible. So these are obviously not the behaviors you want, but those are the behaviors that follow as the solution to the objective if you state it incorrectly.
And you say maybe we need to step back and rethink our fundamentals so we avoid that scenario we just laid out and literally thousands of others. How do we need to go back to square one in our thinking about artificial intelligence?
So I should say this is a serious problem, not just for future AI systems, but actually for existing ones. The biggest problem I think we have right now is social media algorithms that have one objective in mind, which is basically to monetize you, the user, as much as possible. So maximizing click-through or other measures of your eyeballs being glued to the screen. And as a result, they've learned to manipulate human beings to be both addicted and extremely predictable. So they turn people into extremists, not because they want them to be extremists, but because extremists are predictable and therefore they can generate more cash from you. So this is a problem already. And when you ask the social media companies, well, you know, why did you create this super powerful platform with it, which has this objective, which is really wrong, right, which is messing up our democracy and international relations and everything else, they said, oh, we made a mistake. And the question is, how do you fix this mistake? And I think the answer is we can't build our systems on the assumption that humans can supply correct objectives. So the system has to know that it doesn't know what the true objective is, that whatever information we've supplied is partial, possibly incorrect. So we want it to be more like a perfect butler than a genie from the lamp that takes your wishes as its command. The perfect butler knows that maybe you've had a couple too many to drink. There's a bunch of things that you forgot. The butler also knows a whole lot about you and your preferences that you usually forget to mention, but he can fill in the gaps. And when it's not sure, when there's anything that needs to be done that might affect a piece of the world that the system is not sure whether it's okay to mess with, then it ought to be asking permission. So if you say to a climate control system, okay, let's restore carbon dioxide back to pre-industrial levels. That sounds like a great objective. We'd all like that to happen, get our climate in balance. But the easiest way to do that is to get rid of all the people. because they're the ones making the carbon dioxide. So the first thing that system should do is to say, well, okay, the obvious plan is to get rid of all the people. Would that be all right? And you should say, well, no, of course not. But, you know, then the second plan is, well, instead of getting rid of all the people, we just gradually, through social engineering, convince them not to have any children so that the human race dies out in the next 60 or 70 years. And is that okay? And again, you should say, no, that's not all right. Because, and then you realize, actually, no, there's a whole lot of stuff I'm leaving out. So the system, by being sort of humble with respect to its understanding of the objective, is always going to be deferential to the human, because the human is the one who has the objectives, and the machine knows that it doesn't really know what they are.
We're talking to University of California, Berkeley computer science professor Stuart Russell. His new book is called Human Compatible: Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about artificial intelligence? What positive or negative experiences have you had with AI? What do you think about the ones you might interact with on a regular basis? As he was mentioning, the things that your social media feeds might present for your perusal. Do you work in artificial intelligence in some way? Love to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about artificial intelligence with computer science professor Stuart Russell. His new book is called Human Compatible: Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about what you're hearing from our guest about the limitations, the concerns about artificial intelligence, the way we're using them now and might use them in the future? What questions do you have for our guest about how all this could work for our benefit, could hurt us one way or the other? Has artificial intelligence impacted your life? Is it part of your job in some way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll bring out a caller now. Lou is with us in Oregon. Lou, hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. First-time caller, long-time listener. My question is in regards to the story I read several months back in which Google and Facebook set up a computer network between two AI machines. And in the course of this experiment, the machine started created their own language, and the program was quickly shut down. So I'd like to get your thoughts on the rise of the machines and whether this could lead to, you know, AI machines talking to each other, creating nefarious initiatives.
Lou, thanks for that call. I dimly remember reading something about that. Stuart, is it closer to the front of your mind than mine?
Yeah, I mean, it was to some extent a real story, although I think the media blew it a little bit out of proportion, as occasionally happens.
It happens.
But this is actually, this is something that people have been studying for decades, is how does language emerge? And one way you can study it is actually to put two entities into a little simulated environment in such a way that it's set up for them to gain some advantage from communicating with each other. And they can communicate, you know, by, you know, leaving a stone in a particular place, or, you know, by opening a door or closing a door, or marking something on a sort of a virtual piece of paper. Or by, you know, if you set it up with a direct channel between them, then they can just send ones and zeros. And the code that they invent can be pretty much arbitrary. As long as they come to an agreement about what it means, they can benefit by, for example, collaborating on some tasks by saying, okay, you take one end of the sofa and I'll take the other end of the sofa, for example. So this has been around for decades. I don't think there was any risk that the machines were, you know, going to wake up and become conscious and start plotting something. But it does point to one of the issues with some approaches to building AI. There's an approach called evolutionary computation, where we just specify who gets to live and die in some giant simulation, and then we have an evolutionary process which basically operates on the programs, the algorithms that the machines run, and messes around with them in the hope that eventually, just as happened in biological evolution, the machines become more intelligent. And that's a recipe for creating systems that you do not understand how they work. And in particular, they could develop in the process internal objectives that aren't even aligned with the definition of fitness in the environment. Just like, for example, in the real world, drug addicts develop incentives that aren't really aligned with staying alive and reproducing. It's just one of those accidents of evolution in the interaction of life with the environment. So I wouldn't recommend artificial evolution or another approach that creates black boxes is just to essentially try to copy the human brain by, you know, finding a dead person's brain, slicing it up, making a detailed copy neuron by neuron of the entire system. You don't know how that person's brain works. So making a machine that way is a recipe for having a very unpredictable system.
Lou, thanks for that call. We're talking to Stuart Russell. His new book is Human Compatible, Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control. Got an email from Denise who says AI algorithms absolutely boot out older working age Americans and do not allow for job applications. They screen for age, worried about the impact of algorithms on job applications. And Stuart, this is a concern that comes up a lot, that people create algorithms and then look at algorithms as these objective measures of job qualifications, risk of committing crimes, again, for people in the court system, things like that. How important is what we put into these artificial intelligences? Not that they're malevolent, but they just recreate our biases.
Yeah, so there's two ways that this happens. One is that the algorithm designers themselves have some ulterior motive in the way they design the system. But I think that's not the problem. At least I hope that's not the problem. The problem is that the data from which the algorithms are trained reflect the biases of society. If you're browsing around on the web, you know, quite often on a lot of websites, you see adverts for jobs that you could apply for. And you might not know it, but that ad is very carefully selected for what the machine has learned about you, about your age, your ethnic group, where you live, what kinds of things you type into the search engine, where you browse. It tracks your cell phone to know where you go. So it has a massive amount of information. And the connection between that and what jobs you're interested in really reflects the historical biases of society as to which people end up being allowed to have which kinds of jobs. And that bias is so pervasive that if you're an African American browsing on the web, you will often see things for, bail bonds, maybe jobs for security guards or bus drivers, or possibly joining the military, which are traditionally, occupations that have been open to African Americans. And you won't see ads for, being an accountant, being, CTO of a tech corporation, and so on. And this is extremely unfair and actually exacerbates the problem that we would like to fix. So a lot of AI companies now have become aware of this, I would say a little bit reluctantly, because they don't like to be told that they're actually part of the problem. But I think they are on board now with trying to solve it. And there are technical solutions that can actually produce fair outcomes even from biased data sets. The tricky part is that those fair outcomes, because they no longer reflect the historical data, may not be quite as accurate as an algorithm that is just reflecting the historical data. And so one issue that we don't have a resolution for yet is who's going to pay for that inaccuracy. If it's a loan company that's issuing loans that may get a slightly lower repayment rate than they would like, who pays for that? Is it the other customers, or should it be the government that pays a kind of a subsidy to rectify these historical inequalities?
Let's go back to our callers now. Lee is with us in Milwaukee. Lee, hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I find the subject fascinating, and I have a question or a concern. It's the AI development programmers in limiting the AI's intelligence so that the AIs aren't necessarily walking around figuring things out more, being, you know, more intelligent than the general population, I just perceive that it could be an issue. And I was wondering if there's any controls being developed for AI intelligence to kind of keep them under wraps or
Interesting.
Keep it under reins.
Stuart, will we hit a point where we need to put the brakes on artificial intelligence and how intelligent it is?
Well, let me give you an analogy, right? Suppose that a whole bunch of corporations were working to develop nuclear energy. And so this would be back, I guess, in the 1930s, 1940s. They figured out how to generate a nuclear chain reaction, but they hadn't yet figured out how to control it so that it didn't blow up. So would you let those corporations go ahead and start creating these nuclear chain reactions that were uncontrolled? No, of course not. You'd say, wait, you don't get to do anything until you solve the control problem. So what I'm arguing is, you know, as AI races forward, there may come a point where if we haven't solved the control problem, then we need to stop. We need to basically, I don't think you can put a ban on research, but you can put a ban on deployment, on what can be actually connected to the internet, what can be sold as a product, what can be let loose in the wild. So you would have to stop, because the negative consequences of putting a much more intelligent than human system out in the world are really without, you know, there's no bottom limit on how bad things could be. So what I'm advocating is, in fact, that we work very hard to solve this control problem, because the benefits of AI are potentially enormous, but we won't get those benefits if we don't solve the control problem, just as we lost the benefits of nuclear power because of Chernobyl and Fukushima.
It's a good place to leave it. Stuart, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a delight.
That's Stuart Russell, professor of computer science at the University of California, Berkeley. We've been talking about his new book, Human Compatible: Artificial Intelligence and the Problem of Control.